been everywhere, man. Body fluids. You know, we are coming out of the intro music. So welcome to Barnstorming PA. We're happy you all are here. I'm Jordy, one of the producers and the host. And today I'm very much wearing my hat of somebody who used to teach management and economics. Dwayne.
Hi, I'm Dwayne. Glad to be here, Jordy, with you once again and other folks. I'm Dwayne Heisler with SEIU Healthcare PA, also involved on the executive committee for the State Democratic Party. I'm involved also with several local progressive groups on boards and used to doing the good fight. So glad to be here. Sam?
Yeah, this is Sam Pearson. I'm here in Lewisburg. I'm with Lewisburg Neighborhoods, which is all about neighborhood revitalization. And for the last 10 months, COVID all the time. So Karen, we hear from you.
Hi. Yes, I'm Karen Wolf. I'm a nurse practitioner and a community health clinical specialist. I've been teaching nursing for a number of years, currently practicing, but taking a break this semester. And I'm here in Lewisburg as well and pleased to join in as I have been passionate about trying to do better in terms of our public health.
Karen, we're so glad to have you here. I've known you for a few years. And when you said, I'm very passionate about, I thought you were about to say podcasting, and I was so excited.
Well, you know, podcasting is one way to get out the information mm-hmm. on public health. And what the research shows is you have to use as many strategies as possible. So podcasting, newsletters, blogs, you know, we have to hit people, however, because then it's what's the, you know, you look at the circulation of the local paper, you know, that's not cutting it.
No.
And look at the circulation of the radio shows, that's not cutting it.
But I do feel like there's a certain tendency among people, even younger than like Sam and myself, to assume that newspapers are completely dead in the water. And I do actually find, especially compared to urban areas, I feel like out here, an awful lot of people pay attention to our local paper, and especially who's writing the op-eds and letters to the editor. You know, the
papers,
you know, somebody picks up the New York Times and they're like, oh, blah, 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 expert, I'm interested in that. We pick it up and we're like, oh, this person that I know wrote this letter.
Absolutely. You know. And I don't dismiss it. I've written letters to the editor of the local paper.
Yep.
I pick it up every day and read those letters and opinion pieces. Yep. And they're really important and influencing. But I agree with you. Podcasts are, a lot of the younger people really gravitate to the podcasts and the blogs, but mm-hmm. especially podcasts right now is just hot. Yep.
Yeah, it is. Do you have some, just while we're on podcast second, because I think you're a listener. Do you have some that you like that you want to give a shout out to?
I mean, your podcasts or others?
You can say ours if that's true, but others, I meant others.
No, there are a lot of podcasts. Actually, I've been listening, well, as I think it's a lot of the NPR podcasts. I like their political podcasts are terrific. I listen to some podcasts on healthcare. One of my friends is running a podcast on We All Die. That's really interesting, although I tell her it's not really in my bailiwick this Kurt here.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of that podcast really kills.
Yeah, really, well said. And there, I mean, I think, but the NPR political podcasts have been fabulous. Science Friday, I like to listen to their podcasts. And a lot of these are programs as well. I love, I just lost it, my Saturday morning podcasts.
Wait, don't tell me,
because actually one of the mainstays of that program was my son's after school teacher.
Oh.
I've actually gone to that program live.
Wait, who is that?
Now you're asking me, I told my brain on Wednesday and Thursday. Oh, come to me later.
Okay.
All right. Do you ever listen to Andy Slavitt's In the Bubble? I mean, he's not with it now, right? He now has, there's now a new host.
I think I've heard it in the past, but not recently. I haven't, you know, I really need to do better downloading podcasts so I can have something to listen to on my Wednesday days.
It's
and you're not alone. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, some of the research shows that there's like 1,750,000 podcasts going on with 43 million episodes.
Absolutely.
So it's no surprise that 75% of the U.S. population knows the term podcast. And 50% of all U.S. homes, there's a podcast fan in them. So this is a growing trend. And if you look at the demographics, it's reaching a lot of young people as well, like the age groups of 12 to 34. It's 48% is the average age of the listener is right there in that, but less than 34 years old. So yes, those kind of things are helping to reach that audience.
My young 69-year-old husband is constantly on podcasts.
I have to say, I listen to a lot of podcasts. Well, by my standard, I think I listen to a lot of podcasts. But for me, the watershed was my husband started listening. Although it's not, he's like, it's not a podcast.
wait, what's that about? Can you unpack that?
Yeah, he's been watching during the pandemic a thing that's run on Crowdcast called In Lieu of Fun. So it's like the Benjamin Wittes, Kate Klonick program. So it's the, I think, you know, the far left would call it the neocon podcast, but it's more sort of the liberal lawyers angle on things. And they've been doing it from the very beginning of the lockdown, every day, including Sundays and holidays. And they do it on Crowdcast, which is a really interesting platform. So some people do listen to it just audio, but it's a lot of engagement, listener engagement. And in fact, listeners can be brought on to ask questions. So he's very fierce about it not being a podcast, but I'm kind of like,
well, that's so interesting because it reminds me of a conversation with another academic from Lewisburg who will go unnamed, who many years ago, like 2005 or six, said something to me like, I said something about how I was blogging. He's like, he said something like, ugh, like blogs, like why would I read somebody's half-formed thoughts? And it was such a like crystallization for me of like this like tension between experts and elites and gatekeepers. And kind of a sort of, you know, almost Marxist analysis of like, well, we have the tools of knowledge creation in our hands. I think he's changed, but both blog and podcast are not genres unto themselves. You know, they're a platform. And so, of course, like Karen said, like many of us, you know, were like, hey, I can listen to the NPR stuff that I always liked on my schedule. But of course, there's a whole bunch of things that are being created. And we could probably do a whole episode on podcasts. I think I've been listening for at least 10 years. And so it started with actually comedy things. To me, it's just very interesting that there are people like Dwayne. I love the stats about how many people like have never heard of a podcast, but there are people who just today I let somebody know who loves information and ideas. I was like, he'd never heard of podcasts. I was like, well, here's how you download them. And this is somebody who's our age. But anyway, it's still interesting to me that it's like a trend. To me, it's like a fact of life. It's not a trend. But Dwayne, I think you're right. For many people, it still feels like a new trend, you know.
I think I do blogs, podcast, and video casts because I watch a lot of video casts. I'm doing a lot of work on environmental health and climate change with the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And I get sent several video programs a week from various environmental health and climate change groups.
So that's excellent. So that was a fun sort of sidebar discussion, but let me just bring up a few housekeeping notes. Of course, you know, people can hear our podcast if you're listening to it now on any of the fine podcasting platforms. Our website is www.barnstormingpa.org. Barnstorming PA, all one word, with no space between Barnstorming and PA is what we are on Twitter and Facebook. I do know that I'm on Twitter just as myself as at Jordy Sunshine. Dwayne, do you want to put your handle out there? Because you're on Twitter a fair bit, aren't you?
Yeah, it's at Dwayne Heisler, so okay. It's pretty simple.
It is pretty simple.
And you can also see me on Facebook, too. Heisler, Heisler. Dwayne, Dwayne. Wayne with a D in front of it.
Sam?
What?
You're on Twitter, right? I actually was just...
Do I know what my handle is?
No, but if you look Samantha Pearson, or if you look up me or Dwayne and look in who we follow, you can find Sam. But you're actually pretty active on Twitter. I think you might be one of the most active of us.
Okay, but I just don't. I must be at Sam Z Pearson. Sure.
I'm sure you are. Okay. And Taylor, if people are wondering why Sam is surprised, it's because I sprung this on her. And of course, Taylor's on Twitter, and Taylor is here with us in the producer chair. He'll be coming on a little bit later.
I was distracted by my daughter.
Oh, okay. That's fine. That's fine. We do have a survey, a listener survey that we'd love to get some feedback on. We know some of our episodes have hit north of 2,000 and 5,000 hits So that's been really exciting for us. And we're looking forward to sort of learning more from other people. And I'm, my ears are definitely perked up about the Crowdcast, which I'd never heard of, because we are definitely looking for ways to bring our audience in, you know, into the show and more directly. I think that's probably about it for housekeeping for now. We're going to move into, our headlines of the week. Does somebody have one that they want to do first? Mine is actually not COVID, so I don't know if that matters.
You can do non-COVID and then we'll get to business.
So who has are y'all's headlines all COVID related? All right, I'll do mine first. So my headline is fair weather deficit hawks. That's the headline. And it comes out of seeing some comments from Pat Toomey, our senator, and some of the other usual suspects that, you know, Biden's stimulus plan is, clearing their throat, clutching their pearls. It's just not the right time. It's too much. I'm sure if there are people listening, you know, who follow this, it's just unbelievable how much the current Republican Party, and for most of my adult life, is very concerned about deficits whenever Democrats are in charge and or when we're talking about real people's needs. I was poking around a little bit, and if people don't remember, in 2017, during his administration, one of his only accomplishments legislatively was his tax cut, which had one of those sort of Orwellian, revenue growth and job creation was the actual name of the bill. It's spread over 10 years, and at the time, estimates varied, but just to keep this in mind, it was $1.3 trillion for, that's what Biden is proposing as a combination of stimulus and other things now. That tax cut was $2.5 trillion over many years, was one estimate, and people around 2020, I poked around, and like the Economic Policy Institute and some others were talking about how, just as many of us knew, it did very little to stimulate the economy. Most of it went to very short-term. There was some headlines around some pay increases that some businesses paid out, but those were short-term, like morale bonuses. They weren't actually increases to wages, which are more sustainable over time. A lot of it went to stock buybacks and other accounting tricks that boost stock prices. And of course, as we all know, it didn't create new federal revenue. So on top of tax revenue, so that whole voodoo economics thing doesn't work. So I'm just so tired of this, and I'm tired of these sort of the way, honestly, our media, I feel like, maybe it's not fair to blame them, but there's just this idea that like, oh, if we cut taxes, it'll create jobs and grow the economy. And the right gets to say that utter bullshit all the time. And it's not true empirically. And one of the reasons that we probably had less federal capacity to deal with this pandemic is because we had blown a hole in the budget again. You know, they ran up the deficit in 2017, 18, and 19 before the pandemic hit. Giving out yet again, you know, and it's tax cuts to their wealthy friends, to the donor class. So I'm done ranting, but yeah.
I just want to point out though that actually a lot of people, in fact, Heather Cox Richardson, I think in her letter from yesterday, noted that, you know, Biden and the Democrats are trying to, you know, do bread and butter things and tie climate response to building jobs, good union jobs, you know, manufacturing in this country, ways of supporting the middle class again. But Trump does make, you know, the history of the past 4 years does make that difficult, because it is hard to compete with someone who is paying in the wages of whiteness, right? And he ran on making jobs for, manufacturing and lower income people. He did not produce very much in that realm, but he still satisfied people by paying in these more, not ephemeral, but less concrete ways, sort of bolstering people's self-image and, just the concept of white supremacy.
So that was thank you, Sam. That was my headline, Fairweather Deficit Hawks. Should we, any other people like it? Compared to some of mine, it's a little shorter. All right.
Yeah, well done.
Thanks. I live for those gold stars.
I like the hawk and the weather, you know?
Yes. Remind me later to talk about a board game you might like. So, Dwayne, you got a headline?
I mean, we've been hearing so much about the the mutation of the virus, you know, the UK version, the South African version, the Brazil version, the California version. And so that was kind of part of it. But then we've also been hearing, even today in the New York Times, about like how that they're seeing, because of additional mandates by states to wear masks, that there's actually seems to be a little bit more mask wearing than there was previously, finally, a little bit like moving in the right direction, I guess. And then, of course, hearing about how many masks to wear, we're probably going to go in a deep dive for this, like multiple masks wearing. So my headline is, virus mutates, mask updates. So I thought, kind of one side of the other, you know, this is in four words what we're hearing a lot about, like what is happening and one way to deal with it. So that was
it's great. It's got that internal rhyme. I can see Amanda Gorman's poetic style has maybe, you know, filtered out and influenced you too with the it's great. I love it.
I can go follow with a similar COVID theme, and I have alliteration to that will be my poetic device that I am using. So it's time for patience and perseverance, and it's like Dwayne, in this case, patience refers to the vaccination rollout, and perseverance refers to the need for, because of the variant, and the gradualness of getting everyone vaccinated, we need to continue and even step up all of our mitigation measures and risk reduction.
Is there, but if we were going to add, Sam, I mean, I hear that, but it's also, I feel like there's a sort of calmness around that, that somehow, we need sort of fierce patience and perseverance, right? Like,
you need what?
Fierce. Like, there's a fierce urgency of now about these things. So we want to be patient and persevere, but also not be too calm. I don't know. I'm just trying to tweak your headline a little bit.
So that it's just too bland. I hear you.
The time is now! Exclamation point for patience and perseverance. I don't know.
I guess my problem is that I have literally written "It's time to double down" 4 times.
Yeah, I know. You're up to like 2 to the 32nd power now.
Yeah,
I'm doubling down.
Right. I think it's I'm doubling to the 5th. But it's I write it and I see myself writing it and I'm like, one of the challenges is, Jordy, that if we're successful, it will look like an overreaction. Well, what does it look like in advance? It looks like too much, right? If we're unsuccessful, it's an underreaction, right? Like, we don't want that either. But I'm sort of at this point where I'm just like, I don't have anything else. I need people to be patient. I mean, I'm thrilled that people are anxious to get the vaccine. That's better than refusing to get it, in my book. Yes.
So, I mean, could a headline of that, though, Sam, be like, country completely overreacts to COVID and crushes it? Right? We really went overboard and really wore a mask and really stayed away from people and really did everything we could to just mitigate a fucking pandemic, right? We did everything we could, and now, that overreaction just resulted in killing the virus, you know?
I was gonna add that fear is not a great motivator for change in public health, and that's the problem. And you can only put so much fear into it, and people just shut off. And that's sort of where we've been at, I think.
I mean, I know that all of you all are 10 times the expert I am on this, so I very hesitantly stick my toe in this water. But like, isn't fear a good motivator for some of the population, but not for the last 20% we need to really listen? Like, it's a pretty good motivator in my household.
There's a difference between fear and caution. And so caution is like this informed version, understanding of risk. And yes, you can even be like a little overreactive to risk. Like, I'm married to a structural engineer. His job, his entire training is about managing risk, right? And controlling risk. So he is pretty darn risk averse. Right? And that is a personality thing, and it colors how we make decisions and what we do in our family. But other people have different risk profiles. I would not say that he then does things because he's afraid of them. He does them because he understands them. And so I would say similarly, people having a clear idea of what the consequences or the potential consequences of different activities are is different from fear. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. people who do react with fear to real information, like Karen said, do tend to shut down, like, or to push back irrationally and unproductively.
Yeah, I guess I would have called that panic more than fear, but I hear what you're saying, and I don't want to do the semantics.
Yeah, it's complicated. Yeah. Humans are very complicated.
Yeah. So, Karen, how about your headline?
Well, you want a headline. I was going to say, can Senate rescue America with the COVID-19 response and healthcare plan proposed by Biden? It's not very sexy, but, you know, it's...
Policy rescue time, you know?
Great question, right?
Yeah, we don't judge what some people find sexy.
That's great. I don't find the Senate sexy.
Yeah, I mean, utilitarian underwear is sexy for somebody, I'm sure.
No. So, but anyway, it's a great question I think we're facing for the next couple, however long it takes to really make a decision on this.
Well, and it's something we've been waiting for months. So this,
yeah, a year. We should have had a plan in place last January. I mean, that's the sad reality of it. You know, when the time to do a pandemic is when the first instance of potential spread of a virus from Asia is noted.
Right. And so we're trying to make that a reality, and we have fallen behind, basically.
Oh, way behind. Yeah, way behind.
On this question of whether we are, whether we could be overreacting, I think there are countries that actually did react, right? So we have a number of Asian countries. Vietnam is like a superstar in this. Certainly, you know, Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, Taiwan, doing very well. And even Japan, which hasn't done great, and in fact, they sort of did fairly well by accident, they have blown it recently in part by mimicking the U.S. There has been a lot of pushback in Japan, and so they did a program in recent months where they were trying to do economic stimulus and sending people to go to travel and go to restaurants. And it's like, you've been telling people for 10 months, literally, you know, the three C's to avoid close contact, you know, indoor spaces, and now I can't remember the three C's because I haven't talked about them in a while. What's that?
I was gonna say masking, but
they did do masking as well, but that wasn't actually listed in the
circulation.
Now I'm gonna have to look it up. But my point is that they had been very focused on the hazards of indoor gathering early on, and then they blew it by trying to push people into restaurants and then getting from their perspective a spike. By comparison to us, it's almost invisible. But yeah.
I think the three C's are closed spaces, crowded spaces, and close contact.
Yeah.
Or close, crowded, and close.
And that all has to do with circulation, and I'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and ventilation, yep.
Well, I think we're kind of at that point, although I was thinking an alternate headline since Biden has taken over is like, you know, a fresh breath of competence air or something like that. Like just, you know, I'm sure that we all know this, but just the raw impact of a little bit of competence can go so far. To be honest, I haven't followed some of the COVID news as carefully as I think other people, but, you know, I know that there was literally no plan, like, you know, that Trump at all.
No, that's the sad aspect of this. They had done away with a pandemic group that was really monitoring the potential for pandemics and creating interventions. And today's New York Times had an article about how they also had spent the monies for a lot of this work on other things, used it as a slush fund.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, that's a problem. Would you like me to talk a little bit about the Biden COVID response plan? Let me know when you want me to.
How about now?
Okay. Well, it's a pretty lengthy discussion, and I want to give credit to the Pennsylvania Health Action Network. If folks are not familiar with it, I would absolutely encourage them to look up and join in the Pennsylvania Health Action Network. It the plan as proposed has four major overarching goals. First of all is to establish a national vaccination plan. You notice I said national. One of the biggest issues have been the inconsistencies around how various states have employed vaccinations, and that's been very frustrating with families split across states hearing about this. The second thing is they want to increase the reimbursement for vaccines to make sure that everyone can have access to the vaccine, not just folks like me who are on Medicare, but all for, you know, for lots, you know, the entire country. Expand the testing and the investment in domestic manufacturing of pandemic related supplies, including PPE. But we're also talking about the potential to scale up the production of vaccines, which we sorely need. We also need to scale up the laboratory supplies to do testing so we can have timely testing and contract tracing. And I trained as a contract tracer, but here in this region for a long time, it took 5 to 7 days to get a result back from any kind of COVID test, which was ridiculous because by then you're almost out of your quarantine period. So to tell someone on day 7 you need to quarantine and for 10 days when they've already been, you know, think running around the community has been very ineffective. So anyway, that's another aside. But if approved, the federal government's investment in this effort is quite large. It would include $50 billion on coronavirus testing, you know, $50 billion, $30 billion for federal disaster relief to ensure that we have sufficient supplies, and as well to also include allowing the National Guard to come out and participate doing the vaccine administration. Because one thing to get the vaccine out there, we have to get it into people's arms. And our healthcare people are pretty out straight right now. I mean, if we could get, they're trying to get retired healthcare people in as well, the emergency medical corps in various states.
Hold on, Karen. So this is a lot for me to take in. So all of these are all pieces of the vaccine plan, or this is the overall
budget? Overall plan. Okay. It's the overall plan. So it's $30 billion for the disaster relief plan to help get the supplies, protective gear, as well as provide support, particularly also focusing on some of our tribal areas where they've been very devastated by the COVID. I have some former students working in New Mexico, and they have lost almost their entire senior population of Native leaders, which is so sad. So but the National Guard would be put out as well as the Defense Protection Act put into place to really help create some of these supplies.
So
go
ahead, Sam. Sorry.
I just want to interject that this is a long, there is a long list of stuff that is all in this package.
Yep.
But like a lot of people are like, wait, why do we still need to focus on testing? Because we're moving on to vaccination. And that's one of the really critical things. Like people still don't understand why testing is necessary in the first place. And it's going to be even more important.
I hope you're going to answer that question right now because I don't know.
Well, I think you want to add that. Go ahead, Samantha. I was going to say, because we need rapid testing.
Yep. Testing is critical partly because this disease in particular is not as evident, right? It's not like the flu where you get symptoms and then are contagious. Because we have all of these asymptomatic people who are contagious, we need testing. That's the only way to actually figure out how much spread there is and who's infected and who could be infecting other people. And it's a really hard concept. Add to that that testing takes time, like Karen was saying.
It's hard to understand asymptomatic spread.
Asymptomatic spread, and also to track it, to figure out how to keep track of what's going on, especially if it takes time.
Yeah, you said it was a hard concept. I just want to make sure, what's the hard concept?
Well, it is a hard concept for people to understand that they can be contagious and not feel sick.
They're infected. And, they're infected with the virus. They're infected with the virus. They may have no symptoms, but they can go to work and then infect the entire unit, a nursing unit they're working on.
Yeah.
And that's why they, you know, trying to get rapid testing so we can pick up folks before they potentially spread to other people, to the people they work with, to their grandmother that they're delivering groceries to.
This is even a problem with vaccination. to an extent, potentially even a greater problem, because thus far, it's possible. We're not entirely sure that vaccination, we know that that vaccination is going to prevent severe illness, but it is not at all clear that it prevents people from getting infected. In fact, it's possible we're creating a whole bunch of additional asymptomatic carriers, which is why we really need people, even after they get vaccinated, to continue to do mitigation, to wear masks, to keep distance, and, you know, try to continue to avoid indoor spaces, because they could be just continuing asymptomatic spread. We already are dealing with asymptomatic spread from people, you know, not everyone just develops a serious case, but the vaccine actually, ironically, is going to amplify that.
So this is playing out in a different way in the healthcare field. As you know, I'm with SEIU Healthcare PA, where we represent, healthcare workers in nursing homes, at home health, and in hospitals. And this is one of the things that we've been fighting for all along. I mean, this pandemic has revealed weaknesses in our healthcare structure that has been there all along and are even worse now. And one of the things is that we're healthcare workers are considered heroes, right? But we still have issues of making sure that we're being respected for the work that we do and that we're protected while we're doing it. And part of that, Sam, is the testing you're talking about, and Karen as well, is removing the barriers. Like, we still have problems within our healthcare workplaces, workspaces of, like, if we've been exposed, if workers have been exposed to COVID, they're still not getting the testing like they should be getting. And we don't want this spreading around our hospitals. And so removing those barriers for testing is a critical part of the campaigns that we're seeing in healthcare workers. And the second part, which kind of like fits into this as well with some of the funding you mentioned, Karen, is that anyone, any staff member who requests one should get an N95. They should be fitted for it. Mm-hmm. And that should be provided to all staff that are within those indoor spaces, in those healthcare facilities. And it is not happening. And so, like, just even, I mean, it just, I'm just echoing how that's playing out in our healthcare systems in Pennsylvania and the struggles that we're having, because we're fighting to make sure that we are protected and that our elected officials and also the owners of our facilities are stepping up and protecting their workers.
Dan?
It's not only for healthcare workers. I mean, healthcare workers have acute exposure, but this is one of the ways I think we can really draw, a distinction between past administration and the current one, is that there was a White House coronavirus task force for many months, and their last report...
Was there, though? Or was there just the simulacra of one? But anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, they didn't have a website. They didn't have a presence online. They occasionally did press conferences that were not, Trump booster events. But they were doing reports weekly or every other week or once a month for a while. Their last report in around January 11th or so, they put out these 12-page, fairly dense but also kind of medium vapid PDF documents. And in there, it pointed out that schools reopening really need to have a comprehensive testing program for the students. So that's nice. The National White House Coronavirus Task Force was telling us this, right? And they were making no efforts to make that happen, to make that possible for anyone anywhere. But that's really what it would take if we wanted to be able to conduct business like sending kids to school and not have it be like playing Russian roulette, right? We have data about, retrospective data about levels of infection and transmission in our communities, and we can look back at what has been happening. We have no indication of whether that's going to go up or down. The rapid testing would give us that insight so that we could make better decisions about day-to-day operations of things like schools that we really need to have happening all the time. And this new plan that's being proposed is actually saying, and this is how we're going to provide funding for it.
Mm-hmm. So there is actually, I was just going to say, there is actually some, there are some other rapid tests in the pipeline that are being defined to get much better and faster results. Because getting the sensitivity to making sure that it picks up on the virus and the specificity at the right level is really critical. And so I agree with Dwayne, we really need to get this out for our healthcare workers. Schools are another interesting challenge, and I can talk a little bit more about that later, because as research has been coming out on school systems, it really, there's a very, it varies greatly between elementary, high school, and college in terms of the great risk for COVID.
Yeah. So Karen, this is a lot of great information. Just to kind of recap a little bit, we need a national vaccine plan.
Yes.
I'm sort of quizzing myself here. There's money in Biden's, this is the $1.3 trillion plan that's being discussed. There's money specifically for more PPE.
$4.15 billion.
Okay. I'm not going to worry about the numbers because I won't remember them. Just sort of the main things. National vaccine plan, which I assume means an actual nationally coordinated plan that deals with the logistics instead of relying on this patchwork of states and other things. PPE, the need for rapid testing. So real quick, do we have that capability or is that a research need? The rapid testing.
Rapid testing. There is some rapid testing available, but there are some better tests coming down the line in research right now. Right now, rapid tests don't give you the level of accuracy that we'd like to have. But there are some that are potentially will be released in the next couple months, I think. And I don't remember the names of them, but I've been sort of tracking on the research. And Sam, do you have anything?
I don't have any of their names. There's just a lot of people saying that even with a less accurate test, if you were doing it all the time, that would catch the errors, right? If you were literally testing every student daily with a rapid turnaround test, if you missed them one day, they would be fairly unlikely to get a false negative 3 days in a row. So you would get them the next day.
So it's like thinking of testing as an ongoing, screen as opposed to a one-off event.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I read a research report yesterday that showed that they had, I forget what country, students were doing their own tests and were very able to do it. So the manpower issues weren't not that great. And, they were able to do it and check to themselves and be checked and very effectively. But I think I'm hopeful that we'll have even better tests. I mean, what we need to do is, having regular screening of certain settings where it's high risk. Our healthcare settings are some of our schools.
But schools, we'll come back to schools in a sec. Go ahead, Sam.
Some of the manufacturing plants, post office, you name it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues right now is testing is in this in-between level. Some places that can afford it, like, say, Bucknell, do marginally okay surveillance testing, right? Assurance testing, where they test people every week or every 2 weeks, which is you really need to test them more often than that. But they have the money to invest in it, and they've chosen to invest in it. We need so much testing available that it is also really cheap, right? Yeah. We need to push that. Right now, it's very unusual and hard to access and expensive. We need to democratize it literally by doing more of it and driving the cost down.
I know personally I'm faced with this. Long-term care was slow to get testing, and that had to do with the way the state responded to skilled nursing and assisted living personal care settings. They now have a plan in place. My mother, for example, her setting is tested once a week, and that helps. It's not great because, within 7 days, you're going to have different people coming positive. But anybody new comes in, they've been very strict about who can go into the setting. No, at this point, most of us have not seen our family members for almost a year.
The ones, in the long-term care.
Yeah. And long-term care is personal care. It's really tough. But the testing program once a week is probably not sufficient, but it's much better than the non-testing, that the lack of it at all at the very first, 5 months of this pandemic.
So
it took a long time.
So if we were, I don't know if this is quite what you had in mind, Karen, but if we were going to kind of bullet point some of the major pieces, we've talked about several. Do you have a few others? And then maybe we can talk about.
Yeah, let me just add to the testing, also adding veterans healthcare to this, because they have not done well at all in the veterans system for lots of reasons. Also, they're adding money for domestic manufacturing and pandemic supplies, because a lot of our industrial workers really require to have testing and supplies in their settings. We've certainly saw that in the warehouses. I know in the Hazleton area, they've had a number of warehouses, huge spreads, and also meatpacking plants. Any place where you have confined space and lack of, you know, sufficient ventilation. Substance abuse, mental health services are another piece of this, which is really important, $4 billion. Also looking at domestic violence survivors, because there's been an upsurge in domestic violence. Subsidizing COBRA for folks who are coming off of COBRA. In the same time, we're trying
could to just have a national health insurance plan. But anyway, keep going.
Exactly. I mean, I'm just going to add that, you know, we need to also have Pennsylvania open up, you know, the ACA enrollment for people who need it, who don't simply lose their job, but are in that interest, you know, people who are like part-time workers, gig works, or would really benefit from that. That's a state issue. Ensuring that we've talked about vaccine, making sure that they're equitably distributed, looking at the Native American lands in particular. Federal assistance will be increased to 100% for vaccine administration. And there is this sort of links to some trying to normalize the way Medicaid, and this would set a precedent that might be possible to increase the funding for Medicaid expenditures, which are a barrier for some healthcare providers to participate in Medicaid or do much with Medicaid because the reimbursement is so poor across some areas of the country more than others. It's a big hit. In California, you couldn't get a provider to take Medicaid patients. It was despicable. You know, and so they're really trying to look at shifting that by starting with the COVID care. And then a premium tax credit used on individual health plans will be set up so that it's no more than 8.5% of health coverage. But right now that lowers it so that it'll be what people have to pay for an ACA plan, like through the Pennsylvania PREP plan, that would be less than they would have to pay before, because there are those folks who say the premium's too high. So they're going to try to rein in the cost of coverage through the ACA, starting with this bill. That's one thing, which would be one step maybe towards Medicare for all. Who knows?
Yeah, I want to back up to something you said about that was in there about vaccine distribution and getting, you know, priority. And, you know, there's issues with identity and, you know, who people are. There's definitely greater exposure for people of color around the country and in Pennsylvania. It's also, there are certain health conditions that put you at greater risk. There's age, you know, we know about all of these things. You mentioned veterans, you know, being in a risk category and not necessarily getting the health they need. And you mentioned certain occupations, and those occupations may be more frequently tied with workers of color, but they're also sort of known. So we look at Pennsylvania established these various tiers or phases for vaccination priority, and we know that that has been changing. So one of the things that happened, right, they set up the phase 1A, 1B, 1C. Why they weren't just A, B, and C, I don't know.
Or 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right. Everyone wanted to be first.
Exactly. That's
why
we're all middle class.
Yes. They didn't do 8 categories. Above average. That's why, to make it look like there weren't 8 separate categories.
Well,
make the list looks shorter.
Right, the list looks shorter, but what happened, so we already had our initial 1A was approximately 1 million people, and the state has almost 13 million people in it. On January 19th, the 1A group, by federal recommendation.
Okay, whoa. Yes. Let's just bracket this for a sec, because I'm trying to add a little bit of structure. So Karen gave us a really good summary of the main pieces of the Biden plan. I think one thing that's emerging from this conversation is, like, what are the things, you know, if we were going to talk about, like, what do we really need at kind of not 20,000 foot level, but 5,000. So that's a lot of really valuable things that are in the Biden plan. I just kind of wanted to pivot back to Dwayne for a sec, because I think that there are other things that can be done at the level of either facilities or healthcare systems? Dwayne, are there some things from the union's perspective or other perspectives, like, you know, in addition to these good ideas that are coming from the federal plan, what are, you had mentioned in the chat, like, what did we want to see happen at the facility level?
Yeah, so one thing is, and you know, Sam, the discussion has been really good about just basically having these task force, right? Sadly, like, healthcare facilities themselves all need a task force, and not everyone has them, about how they're handling things within their facility. And if they do have them, sadly, they're not made up of people who are working in each department. And so if you don't have a voice at the table, you end up neglecting, because the virus doesn't care which department you're in, right? Like, and so safety needs to be a practice that is throughout, that is, you know, consistent and protects everyone. And sadly, that's one of the demands that really has to take place, because we're leaving it up to the healthcare provider, and they're thinking about profits, they're thinking about elective surgeries, they're thinking about, like, all kinds of things. And then sadly, what happens is, when a healthcare worker ends up testing positive, then there's a pushback and debate about getting unemployment and whether you caught it when you were at, you know, Walmart, or was it really working in, you know, is this, and then who knows what the long-term effects are of this. And so there's all of these other factors where we could use some, you know, some leadership in terms of, because if we leave it up to the profit-driven healthcare facilities, you're going to get that as a response, as opposed to, you know, the safety measures that we need with some of these folks that are, you know, working in dietary, or that are actually handling the food trays in every room, or cleaning
housekeeping.
Exactly. So I guess that, just bringing this up, just to mirror, and Sam, you're absolutely right too, like, this is reflective also of, like, how are we dealing with this in grocery stores? How are we working, you know, with other essential workers? And I guess healthcare is just an amazing example for me, because that's where we go, right, to get vaccinated. And that's where we go to somehow save our lives in the middle of a pandemic. And yet we don't have a uniform way of actually protecting workers and making sure that their work is respected, that they're paid for it, that they are, like, that when they're putting their lives at risk in this war, and how their voices are really not being heard at bedside about what this really looks like.
The other issue I would add, from the perspective of patients, there's been very little research done on how different groups of patients respond to the vaccine. And that's something that's slowly emerging. So, you know, the timing of the vaccine for folks who are getting cancer treatment, like I've been going through, they don't really know that yet. They don't know for people who are on any immunologics, they're immunosuppressive. You know, when is the best time to give them the medication? How do you modify things? So there'll be a lot of information, my sense, coming out, not to pivot too much away from the Biden plan. I want to add, of all things that I forgot to mention, for me as a community health clinical specialist, was the Biden plan proposes to put 100,000 healthcare workers, community health workers, to work. And that means recruiting people to do testing, contract tracing, education around vaccinations. But the point is, these are positions that they're going to make permanent over time, because one thing that has really put us into jeopardy in our country is that we have basically torn apart the public health system. We have unfunded it in states like Pennsylvania, so that you have, what, one public health nurse for 12 counties or something?
I mean, there is a public health office in Union County. Like, I know it exists, but I don't even know what it does.
It doesn't have a nurse. It doesn't have the, you know, I mean, and so what we're facing is that we lack the infrastructure to deal with it. We have basically turned public health over to our profit-making nonprofit healthcare systems.
Let's just pause on that, because I think it's important. Profit-making nonprofit healthcare system, I mean, that's beautiful. It kind of relates to something Dwayne was saying, which I think is important, is these hospital administrators, even if they're UPMC or Geisinger or things that are on paper, are nonprofit. And we may, you know, I personally have had very good experiences at Geisinger. The decision makers are looking at the revenue spreadsheet, because they have
They have to. I understand that. But they have to generate enough money, you know, to kind of expand and update. And, I mean, we have a healthcare system trajectory that always moves to bringing in the newest innovation. Mm-hmm. But that means like old-fashioned innovations, like how do you manage a pandemic, are not really part of their modus operandi. Preventative healthcare has not really been a major focus. And despite the fact that the ACA built in a lot of preventative healthcare measures and what they call population health,
Well, it's a lot more profitable to sell somebody a new car than it is to sell them spark plugs.
Yeah, and I think there's just been tacit adoption. I mean, we have the fresh food pharmacy that Geisinger offers, but that will help, but it's not going to prevent a pandemic.
There's a theme, and I'm so glad, Karen, you were talking about some of these bigger pictures, but like, we were talking about the National Guard. You're talking about the need for a robust public health care system and bureaucracy, and the fresh food pharmacy. All those things to me are connected by this mode I feel like we've been in American politics and society for, again, most of my adult life, which is, we completely undermined and hollowed out all of these systems that could deal with things in a more resilient way at kind of the level at which they happen. And then we rely on either the military or the judicial system to like fill the gap. So like people love drug courts and I'm like, they are great. But if you actually treated addiction earlier, it would be far less expensive per person. And so what you're saying, like, instead of like dealing with the lower cost interventions that are preventative care, we put all this money into the back end. And a little bit the National Guard, like I think there's a place for them probably in the pandemic, but overall I'm a little, it's like it's only become palatable in America to let the military and the judicial system do things. I mean broadly from kind of the moderate or like whatever that perspective is. Like people think the National Guard and the military are great, and then they still have this Reagan, the long shadow of Reagan, that government is always the problem. It's like we need to get over this because it's probably the National Guard is not really set up, I don't think, to do this, right?
No, like, why are we using that? The stopgap measure until they can get people. They should have hired. I mean, they've been trying to hire contract tracers in Pennsylvania. They offered me I could go and work full time, which I didn't, obviously couldn't do.
Is it good pay?
I don't know. I have lots of friends who are working as contact tracers in other states, and they are more flexible. Pennsylvania has not been particularly flexible, which is one of the issues. Let me just go back and say someday we can come back and have another podcast about social determinants of health, because that's kind of what you're talking about, that we have a healthcare system that looks at medical care, but that's not the same as healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Right. Dwayne, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'm just, this conversation is really fascinating. It's kind of gone into a lot of things, but we touched on some things in our headlines too. And, I guess the reason, what's really jumping out at me are, these variants that we're going through. And even though like just recently, it looks like our positive numbers are coming down some just in the last day or two. There was something in the New York Times about it this morning about the potential of maybe, if you really do the math, maybe a third of all Americans either have had COVID or, currently have it, and between the however million have been vaccinated or whatever, like between all of that, we're maybe some herd immunity is starting to catch up with us now. And the combination of that, it was in the New York Times this morning, the combination of that, and also the fact that there has been some increased mandates of masks in certain states, that maybe now the death rate has kind of like, it's terribly high, but that's always a lagging indicator, as Sam always reminds us. But I guess what is frightening to me is that in the same breath that they're saying, hey, we might be seeing some finally in the U.S., maybe some positive movement with something flattening here or moving the other way, that there's a huge potential because of these variants of it just shooting right through the roof again, right? And that is the kind of thing that has me concerned. And that's one of the reasons why, thank God, we're finally looking at some kind of real funding packages for these things that we need, to help us with that on the legislative side. But there's so much that we have to do publicly. Like when I talk about healthcare workers, we think they have but there are many healthcare workers that are afraid to get the vaccine because they're hearing the rumors as well about, is this going to affect me? What are my side effects? And so there's this resistance even from within the healthcare community to get vaccinated. And this is especially true like in environments like nursing homes and home healthcare workers, as opposed to hospitals. There's a marked difference between the number of employees who have been vaccinated. So not all our healthcare workers have really been vaccinated, but the narrative is that, oh yeah, we're on to the next phase. And it's almost assumed that they are. And in some facilities, we have less than half of the employees vaccinated. That's the real thing, right? So there's a lot of other structural issues here, education-wide and mm-hmm. how it's really playing out in these facilities.
And the problem is they cannot mandate the vaccination. I know that where my mother's setting, they have done a good job of educating on all their employees' tests. And hopefully they'll be getting their vaccinations next week. I don't know what their vaccination rate will be. But get back to that issue of the trend. I saw Samantha. You know, we had the what I call the New Year's Eve parties surge.
Yeah, we've had a long hangover.
Yeah, and the long hangover is they went home to their parents or their family, and they then got infected. And so you have that. That's why it's what we're at the 20s. This is about the end of that trend line from New Year's, unfortunately, of all the folks who didn't socially mm-hmm. distance themselves.
So this has been, like people said, a really great discussion, and I think the gravity of it has maybe understandably made it a little bit more serious than sometimes, you know, we do. And for me to have Karen, to have you kind of sort of bullet out some of the parts of the Biden pandemic response plan, you know, it's really important. We talked right before we started about the information overload, and I think a lot of people do feel that, and there's something valuable about being able to not be like, hey, everything's fine, right? Because we kind of talked about that, but get into, you know, what are some of the things here that are important? I wonder if it's worth maybe spending just a minute or two before we move on from this topic. Just, you know, we're never going to finish, but move on for today. Like, this is a bill, like, I have not followed the politics super closely, but it's live, right? And so we need the Senate to pass it. I think if people are listening, if you're in Pennsylvania, I'm sure that calling Pat Toomey, writing to him would help, because I think he's been a bit squishy on this. I assume Senator Casey's on board. Does anybody have anything else to add about the politics of it?
No, definitely contact Toomey. And there are a piece of this, the various pieces of that are really helpful. You want to emphasize them. I think that's important because it is a big bill.
Yeah, and it actually comes a little bit back to the headlines. We didn't mean to do this, but Toomey's balking a little bit about the price tag. But it's like, this is not the time, buddy. And furthermore, you're not running for re-election. So we're really seeing what's in his heart of hearts. He isn't being a fair weather deficit hawk because it's about votes. You know, Toomey came out of that whole Club for Growth group. And as much as he maybe sometimes gotten a little bit of credit in the last couple of months for being less awful than some extremists, he's an extremist on this. You know, he just does not, his whole track record is not about what government can do for people, but about what government can do for the donor class.
I do worry that.
In fact, this entire difference between using the National Guard, for example, to implement the national vaccination program, as opposed to standing up a workforce, that's exactly what he's against. He's against creating jobs.
Right.
He is against the idea that there would be something durable created out of this. That's one of the attractions of using the military, is that they can be deployed and de-deployed. You know, they can be pulled back out. And so this is where we need it. We have seen the need for infrastructure, different kind of infrastructure, and we really need to be reestablishing that and getting people good paying jobs in the process.
Yes. I would add that I think that Toomey's been trying to walk a funny line over the last few months. And to some extent, while he says he's not running for election in the Senate, I would be cautious watching his plans in Pennsylvania in terms of, there's some rumor that he might run for governor.
That's interesting. I assumed he just wanted to cash out and be a lobbyist and make a shit ton of money, but I haven't analyzed it very closely.
That'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. So Karen is not only a fantastic, as she said, she's trained as a some kind of nurse. I'm sorry, I forget which exactly.
I'm a nurse practitioner, also a sociologist.
I was going to say, you're also a sociologist, which is close to my heart. I assume there's not a lot of people with your exact qualifications.
No, they're not allowed. I mean, I studied political sociology.
Awesome. So we're also sociology. Getting we're getting
sociology at work, and yeah. I've been kind of engaged in looking at healthcare and issues of class mm-hmm. and gender awesome. And race. And,
awesome.
Or what they call we could talk about intersectionality sometime. And
one thing to lift up, Karen and I really jumped in very early when, if you remember, rewinding to the very beginning of the pandemic, there was a huge debate about whether cloth masks made a difference, whether surgical masks worked or not. There was a discussion about, hey, we got to be careful because if we're gobbling up masks, then healthcare providers are not going to have them. Like, there was a whole bunch of stuff to navigate, and Karen and I worked on, like, there was a local person who owned a costume shop and finding materials. We did research on which materials were better or not, and we got a team of people together with Betty Gray and other folks who created
the thousands of masks.
Yeah, and they were pumping them out. And then when we were getting pushback, because this is when it was first coming out, and we were researching what were they doing in Wisconsin.
Was this like in April, March?
This was really early, Jordy. And we were kind of going there. We knew we were taking risk, and we kept on putting the caveats out there of what we were hearing, and we were kind of a source of information. And then at some point, there was so much pressure that we said, you know what? I think the feeling here is make them. Just make them and stack them up, even if you're just giving them to friends and family at this point, right? There is going to be a need. And if the worst is the worst, that we have a bunch of masks that no one's wearing. So there is the overreaction, like bringing it back to the idea that we overreacted. But as it turned out, Karen, our sense was right. Like, we needed to do that, and we were ahead of the curve. And I know a lot of people who wore a lot of masks because of the work that we had done early on in that pandemic against what was coming out from the media and what was the common conversation about, is it really effective? Does it really make a difference? What, this only protects you and not the, all of that stuff. We said, do it, move forward.
We went from Mifflinburg to Hazleton to Wilkes-Barre. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And I was making runs out to get supplies at some of the Mennonite stores because all their, you know, the other places have already run out. So let me just add, I want to say a couple things about masks. Those cloth masks are very useful now, but as I say, there's indication with the new mutations that they should be worn over the surgical masks. You can pick those up from Amazon or some other supplier. They're not super expensive to add the filtration benefits, unless you all have access to a lot of HEPA filter. So yeah, I think using them over a cloth mask. But there is a new mask on the market called a KF94 I wanted to add. Which, what's nice about it is if you buy an N95 over Amazon or someplace like that, they're not fit tested. They don't fit you well. So that's keeping a close fit on the face that's really important, which is why the cloth mask over the surgical helps. But the KF94 actually has like a little extension on the cheeks to hold it tight and the bands across the back of the head. And in fact, the cloth masks I wear all have, instead of the earlobes, I have the kind that go across my head to hold it tighter. And that's something I think if we could encourage people to look at, we need to get a different face mask pattern out there. I've been using one that one of my UU colleagues have sent to me.
So these KF94 is the Korean version. Yes. There's KN95s. All of these, one of the challenges is
that the Norwegian one?
No, KN95s are Chinese.
Okay.
One of the issues, actually, if you want Norway, it's going to, well, I can't tell you because that's going to give away for our game. Okay, oh. I'm not telling you. But one of the issues is that KF94s are not on the FDA's website with emergency use authorizations yet, whereas you can check for KN95s. So that's a little bit of a challenge. You want to, if you are buying a more high filtration mask, you want to make sure the FDA has approved it, because there are unfortunately counterfeits on the market, and those will not provide the protection you need.
It's like any natural disaster rolls through, and just behind it is the worst of human profit gouging and counterfeiting. I mean, it's just like clockwork.
Yeah.
Real quick, and you know, maybe things I should know, or I'm the Greek chorus here. I thought that the 95 numbers referred to level of filtration. They don't.
They do.
Oh. But the problem is that, you know, depending that some. The FDA put together a list of those that have been tested and approved. And so when I, you know, bought my 95s, I made sure they're on the list. I think it takes a while for the FDA to catch up to do this kind of testing. I like the KF94s if they're same level of filtration, but they have the site, hold them close, because it's the leakage, which is why wearing just a face shield doesn't work if you don't wear a mask, because right. You're still expelling viruses. And I wish I could get that out to the public as well. You know, where
I actually do have a new post on my website. I have not written about masks in many months, but back in those early days, yes, I posted all sorts of stuff about masks, all sorts of links on Lewisburg neighborhoods. But now I did put up last week, or maybe a few days ago, a new post about masks. It goes over all of this. It gives the links for the FDA certification website, and also talks about face shields, you know, and explains in more detail why you would double mask, how you would double mask, and just the whole principle of, we tried, your mask protects me and my mask protects you, and it wasn't working because you weren't wearing a mask.
Yes, or you were wearing it, but your nose was hanging out. And
Karen, I want to just mention about, you said a new design for people making them too, like yes. So that they fit better. I always have a problem because I have a very large head, and the ear ones like just do not work. Like they're bending. And so
we all know about your large head.
Yeah, I knew you. That couldn't go without comment, Jordy. So thank you for being predictable. And so, one of the things that like SEIU, Joint Board Workers United, they had workers who make baseball uniforms.
Oh, great.
And I had worked with them to kind of at the very beginning modify so that they could make masks. So they have all these red masks that they've created. You've probably have seen me with them. But one of the reasons why this is my favorite homemade mask is because of the elastic that goes over your whole head, and then you just do this, and the fit on the side is much better, right?
Yep.
So even though it's not and it's double done, but it's in such a way that it kind of seals it up a little bit
better. I like that.
And it's much more comfortable to wear, to take on and off.
Mm-hmm.
Than it is around the ear.
I definitely think we could maybe barnstorming, but some others, you know, we could collaborate on a sort of mask fashion. I don't mean purely fashion, but like also like what's good about these, you know,
and what fits with whom. I think that's
simple too,
because I actually, my family got a bunch early on that were the tie behind your head, and most people don't like them. I actually like them because I don't know if it's exactly I'm getting the fit, but I just found them more comfortable too, because they're just more comfortable for longer use wear. And it was also very easy to boop boop if I was like going in and out of
I knock out the hearing aids.
Yeah,
I
have right. All right. So
I can't afford to lose those.
Yeah. I can also picture a fun, you know, we had some really good PSAs during the election about like no naked ballots. I'm picturing the nose hanging out, Karen. Like, I think there's probably some fun we could have about like, you know, you wouldn't put a hole in a condom and put it on. Why would you stick your nose out of your mask or whatever?
Yeah,
Sam.
Are we ready for the game on that?
Yeah, I was trying to sort of warm up the crowd.
Could I just add one more thing?
I don't think I can stop you. So go ahead.
All right, so I just want to let you know that it's interesting to watch what's happening in other countries. And this is going to segue into your game. But in Germany, they're now going to mandate the KN95s for everyone, which is interesting. So.
Right, most European countries. And actually, it's been a little confusing because most of the headlines have said, European countries require higher filtration masks over cloth masks. And people are misunderstanding this to mean that you're supposed to wear the filter on top of the cloth mask. What they mean is they just want you to have the high filtration mask. If you wear two masks, which is a thing, double masking is a thing, as we've been talking about, because the cloth mask can actually help hold the mask on your face. It can help preserve the elastics so they last longer and keep the filtration mask cleaner over time, you're supposed to wear the cloth mask on top. And so it's this very unfortunate headline that has apparently been like misunderstood repeatedly. On that note of comical misunderstanding,
I have a better one for you. My mother-in-law talks about in Nashville in the 60s when there was an ice storm, which was more common in Tennessee, and every car was rear-wheel drive in those days. A DJ got on and said, well, your cars do better when the drive when the drive comes from the front, so maybe you should drive backwards. And she told me all over Nashville people were driving backwards in the ice. So on that humorous note, let's do the game.
Okay. I don't know if Taylor normally gives these a name. I don't have a name.
No.
It's just going to be the masking muddle. Okay.
That's a good name.
So I've got four multiple choice questions for you, and then a tiebreaker short answer puzzle. Okay, so first question. And the way this works, Karen, is everyone gets asked and you all give your answers, and then I tell you who's right and you keep track of your own score.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Okay, so which IT couple at the inauguration helped raise the profile of double masking? And here are your choices.
Oh, good.
The Obamas, the Clintons, the Buttigieg, the Buttigiegs, the Bidens, or Bernie by himself? do you want me to repeat?
No, no, that's okay. I'm wondering if the plural of Buttigieg is like Buttigieg or something like that. But anyway,
right.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Bernie.
I thought it was. I didn't see the inauguration, so I thought it was Biden.
Okay, Dwayne.
I don't know, but if we're talking about fashion, I have to go with Buttigieg, so I'll go with him. Although okay. I love Bernie's mittens.
But yeah. Okay. Bernie had a mitten thing, but he was just wearing a surgical mask. So no, he did not have two masks on. Both both Pete and Chasten had on lovely double masks. They had clearly a high filtration mask underneath, and then they each had coordinating cloth masks.
Black mask, I saw that, yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, Chasten's was plaid.
And they are an IT couple?
Oh yeah, they're totally an IT couple.
Okay, all right. Is that from the Institute of IT or? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Next question.
Jordy being obtuse. Okay. Jen Psaki, the new White House spokesperson or whatever
press secretary,
is getting criticism for not wearing a mask during White House press conferences. Which of the following is a valid argument in favor of her not masking? One. Fox reporters complaining about it actually reinforces the frame of masking. Two, lip reading is important for many hard of hearing people. Three, focus groups say people in masks seem dishonest, which conflicts with the Biden administration's desire to project honesty. Four, setting a national example with masks is not really that big a deal. Five, all of the above. Six, none of the above.
Oh dear.
Huh. I know, this is probably a little hard to follow.
This is like GMAT level.
I would say multiple choice.
I'm going to go with the lip reading for the for any kind of hearing impairment.
And how about you, Karen?
I go with what the one that says all of them.
You say all of
I definitely lip reading is a critical issue, but I say all of them.
You shouldn't go with all of them because that included it's not really an issue.
Oh, then I go with lip reading.
Okay, so Dwayne wins. Okay, it's none of them. And the rationale is, news coverage, jujitsu with Fox reporters, forget about it. Lip reading is a legitimate issue, but it can be solved in other ways, like with closed captioning and ASL interpreters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't have those.
They do now.
Do they have translators?
Yes.
They do? Okay, yeah. Then. I've been up there. And I go with Dwayne.
I love that. Education one though with Fox. Like,
yeah.
If we get them to say that it's bad, they're actually passing along our message. That's genius, but it's really not, not the right thing to do.
I thought you were going to say that she made Fox News sit in front of her.
So. Right. Well, so this is the issue. None of those are good reasons because a person standing at the front of the room talking to a whole group of people should be wearing a mask. They are the person in that setting that has the most projection. And so definitely as a national example and in that setting, she should be wearing a mask and I'm getting a little tired of it. Now, I'm sure she is.
I'm sure you and David Rowe are arm in arm on top of that egregious example of hypocrisy.
I don't think it's hypocrisy. I think it's a decision, which is different, actually. They don't think that it doesn't count. They are just, they have different reasons for it. So
I would add that their reason is fear-based.
Right.
Like, if you think about it, they're doing that so that they can get their message across the way that they want to, and they don't want that. They're afraid that if they go the other way, there's going to be consequences that outweighs the fact that there's a pandemic, which is weird, right? Like, Yeah.
Well, and she is tested regularly and maybe is even at this point, vaccinated. I don't know, but it's still the national model is what we've been struggling not having for so long. And that is really critical. And we should address all the other issues, that in mind.
I agree with you. She should wear a mask. But I do think, and this came up in one of her answers to something, or even maybe Cole Goodman talked about it on the podcast, is it's worth pointing out that there are other things going on that may help mitigate, right? She should wear a mask, but I imagine they have the highest quality air filtration. I don't know how far they're distanced in that room, right?
It's pretty small.
It's pretty small.
I would like to see them in a different room.
Well, that's a good, so this is a learning moment. And one of the things
I'd like to see them outside in the good weather.
Or outside now, for God's sakes, be like the Weather Channel, just go outside and put on a coat. This idea that it's useful that we're doing this, having this conversation, and this is too long of a conversation about one game question, but the right keeps acting like this was just a political thing and that we cared about this for a political thing. And it's not that. Like you, Sam, you are equally what was the funny nickname we had for you? The cringe or no, the,
I didn't write it down. I have no idea.
Oh, well, it was a long time ago. It was that you were the
queen of cringe.
What? You had many, you're the person we could all blame or, you were like,
I was the holiday Grinch.
The holiday Grinch. Anyway, you're just as grinchy to somebody quote unquote on our side as somebody on the other side. So
that's
so,
me. Equal points, opportunity grinching.
Well, yeah, points for you. So next question.
Okay, next question. Which of these is not a high filtration masking standard? KF94, N95, FFP2, PX90, or KN95?
Oh, for God's sakes. You are never making a game again.
This is such a good game.
There's too many answers. It's like you're like, it's too easy when there's only four answers. Humans
do it. There are five.
Yeah, that's
too many. Give them again.
KF94, N95, FFP2, PX90, and KN95.
All right, I'm going to go last. Dwayne said PX90.
Yep.
Karen?
I think he may be right, but I'm not sure.
I'm going to go with that because I only know what that is because I used to pay attention to Speaker Ryan.
Okay, my brother used to do it. PX90 is an exercise program.
Yeah, I thought that was like building bulk. Once again, yes.
Okay.
Ding, 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 ding.
Nice. Yes,
Dwayne is doing very well here. So we had already talked about...
Last time I was awful. So I'm picking up for lost ground. I'd like to take this moment to retire.
No, you have... There's more games. There's more questions.
And you can't retire yet. I have a game for next week, but go ahead.
And we talked about all the others except for the FFP2, which is actually a European standard.
Yeah.
Okay. Fourth, and final multiple choice question. Dr. Fauci recently appeared sporting double masks, helping the concept to trend. What cute creature adorned his cloth outer layer? 1, pandas. 2, penguins. 3, puffins. Or 4, pangolins.
I don't know if pangolins are cute.
Wait.
They're totally cute.
The pangolins are classic for a COVID mask.
Why?
Because they were considered to be the source
the host.
The host.
I thought it was the Pence fly.
Dwayne, so many points for alliteration, for callback.
Yes. But so who's going to guess? Work.
I'm going to guess penguins.
Anyone else? Pangolins?
I think pangolin would be a nice idea, but I'm more likely it's going to be the pandas.
Okay. And
I don't know. I'll go with the pangolins as well. I have no idea.
Okay, Jordy got a point.
Woo! I got a point last time for PX92.
You said penguins, right?
Yeah, I said penguins.
Yes, it was penguins.
I had so 2 points.
Penguins. Is he like a Pittsburgh person or like
they were just cute penguins on a blue background. Like, they were just anything. Cloth.
It was just so his default animal is a penguin. Like all, you know, maybe we should ask him which he would have preferred. Like what, you know,
somewhere there's a Q conspiracy about why it was penguins.
Yeah. It's linked to, you know, the melting of the ice caps and
something. Or, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, actually,
he's a master villain. That's what it is.
Yeah. That's it.
And the elites wear tuxes.
Right.
Yeah, and twirling his cane.
That's right. Karen, what were you going to say?
Smoking. I was going to say one of the environmental groups, I think, was selling masks with penguins on them. So, okay. So he's probably a covert environmentalist.
I hope so. Okay, so we're on to our last round. And this, I called it a tiebreaker, but it's not really. This is just going to be, it's basically short answer, and it's your chance to be super judgmental, and I'm going to be judgmental right back at you subjectively. And it's just going to be whoever answers first. You don't all have to answer each one. So I'm going to give you a list, and the question is, what is the character flaw associated with each of these different styles of miswearing masks?
I love it.
Okay, so the mask ear bangle hanging from one ear. What does that tell you about the person you see like that?
They do not lift the lid when they pee, if they're a man.
Hey, I like that.
I think you're right, Jordy.
Okay. Next one. Mask as chin strap. What do we know about that?
Plumber's butt.
Okay.
I like that. It's sort of the facial plumber's butt. They are the person who, this is sort of obscure, but they're the kind of person who would pay to have, I heard about people doing this, they're the kind of rich person who would pay to have a disabled person with them at Disneyland so they could get in the fast line on rides.
Okay. That's interesting. I think they're also going to be paying to get vaccine first, right? Paying to get certified as handicapped. Okay. This is we talked about chin strap. What about just the nose peekers, right?
Oh, that would have been plumber's butt, right? That's a better one.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they're exhibitionists. I see them as exhibitionists. Yes. You know, they're the folks that, you know, that let their whatever hang out.
Yes, those are the people who are wearing bare midriffs way past its fashion pull date.
they're pretenders, right? They're like, well, I'm wearing a mask, but I'm not really, right? But I'm doing what I can get away with this.
And the X-rayed
they're a
version
weak on anatomy.
The X-rayed version is that they insist that, you know, the condom interferes with their ability to have good sex.
And actually, I would also add for healthcare providers, they're being given the wrong size mask. I mean, as Dwayne pointed out, some heads are smaller than others. So these folks that have, there are folks who are wearing it, but they need something to pull tight those ear straps. And truthfulness. This is a truthful observation.
Maybe they feel they're okay because they're generally mouth breathers anyway.
Either that or they never had anatomy and physiology and know those two things are connected.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, we're going to move on to the mask up on the forehead.
QAnon.
Third eye blind.
Okay, I do think that one is just chaotic evil, basically. Yeah. Okay.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
They really don't understand anatomy.
Like, right. Yeah, like, that's really wrong, right?
Like a mask is not a pair of sunglasses.
You know, it reminds me of when Trump said that when he was wearing a mask, someone said he looked like the Lone Ranger. But anyone who knows the Lone Ranger, it was like over your eyes with two holes in it. Like, if he wore his mask that way, like, yeah, it's no wonder he got COVID.
I didn't even know he had said that. Like, I thought I knew everything ridiculous.
He said, oh, yeah, it looked kind of good. People were calling me the Lone Ranger. I'm like,
well, you know what he... Like, it must have been someone said, who was that masked man or something, which is sort of a funny thing to say, but then he twisted it into a dopey thing to say, basically.
Oh dear.
Okay, next one. Someone with their mask on inside out, like with the, you know, the fuzzy side outside for a surgical mask.
Okay, first, just point of information: on a cloth mask or like a filtration mask?
Like a surgical mask.
And does that actually hurt its effectiveness?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you've worn it more than once, because now you're soaking everything in from the outside. So I equate that with the person who's doing the walk of shame. Like, it's almost like putting your underwear on backwards and getting caught doing it.
I mean, to me, it's the kind of people, everybody may not agree this is a character flaw, but it's the kind of people in a highway traffic slowdown who just speed up and, like, cut in. You know, they're trying to, like, speed up and cut in and like switch lanes in a traffic jam when that just makes it worse.
I think, frankly, there are people who just don't know better.
Right. I think actually my own take on that is that it's someone who got caught, who didn't have a mask on and was supposed to, and just threw it on and put it on wrong in the process. But it also tells you they are not bothering to wear the mask much in general. Well,
and no, I mean, I see people who are wearing masks that are filthy. And they don't know that you need to throw out the surgical masks. They use them for months and then they don't wash the cloth ones.
Karen, that is the next one. Mask as science experiment, part one. Very dirty mask. So what does that tell you about the person wearing it?
Yes.
Like wearing a petri dish or something, right?
Well, I feel bad about that because I go into, you know, Napa Clinic, and these folks are wearing these masks that are filthy brown. You know that somebody gave them a mask, and they've worn it, the surgical mask, now for months. And I'm trying to convince the Geisinger to make everybody coming in, as they do in other oncology hospitals, give them all a fresh mask whenever they enter, make them put it on.
I'm clearly in a privileged bubble, in a bubble of privilege, because I haven't seen anybody wearing masks like that. So.
Oh, well, you know, if you're sitting in the middle of an oncology unit where they won't let you in the door without a mask, everybody has to mask. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen is like some face masks, some bandanas, mm-hmm. which are marginally effective, but somewhat, you know, not as bad as nothing.
Right.
I've seen people wearing gaiters, only one layer thick. They really recommend that they be at least two layer thick to be effective.
Okay, Sam, any more character flaws?
Yeah. So just two more. So mask of science experiment part two, glasses so fogged up the person can't see a thing.
Well, now that's hard to make that a character flaw.
I would consider them simultaneously lawful and chaotic good.
Yes.
I mean, they're not endangering anybody's health with the pandemic. I mean, with the virus with that, are they?
No.
Okay. I mean,
but
I just
they might
think,
be crashing their car.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely people who text and drive.
Okay. And that's, then the last, what's that?
I want to add that when people wear the surgical mask under the cloth mask, there is a little metal piece in there. Lots of people don't know that you can kind of form fit that better. And
right.
I find I get better reception on my cell phone when it's there.
But this is pertinent because if you press it down across your nose, you can keep any mm-hmm. exhaust from the mask that is leaking out from touching your glasses.
I will say that Sam helped me. Just moving my glasses about a half inch forward on my nose helps quite a bit too.
Yeah, a half inch would take it fairly far off.
I have a big nose.
Just move it a little bit forward.
I got four inches to play with.
Okay,
he
last
wears his
one.
Glasses on his chin, so
yeah,
it's
that's
good.
True too.
Okay, last one. What do you think when you see someone in a setting where you should be wearing a mask and they have no mask?
Where were they on January 6th?
We have a name for this, actually, from Taylor. This is Swedish Commando.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what he said, Swedish Commando. Yes,
and the reference is that actually Scandinavian countries have not been requiring masking. They have done a lot of testing. They've been doing other things. And
they also don't like to be around each other.
And there is that...
Yeah, I was just going to add that in Sweden, they now are mandating masks for certain settings. And my daughter tells me she was masking continuously. She lives in Sweden. And people would stop her and ask her, why are you masking? And she says, well, my mother has cancer. But she doesn't tell them I'm here.
I mean, yeah, that is such a care. It's also just, it's the same kind of people who say, you know, well, I'm not a racist, but
yeah. So this notion of not wearing a mask, you know,
it's just the rules don't apply to me. I'm apart from the system.
I want my liberty.
Well, I also don't get it because I actually watching situations like watching movies where we're clearly pre-pandemic, even looking at pictures, you know, I will be like, get anxious because people aren't wearing masks in them because I'm so conditioned to feel like you know, we need to have those on. And I did tell people, I got mad and made a post and I was like, it is convenient that I hate people because, you know, you all are messing everything up. And people were like, well, you're doing a lot of work to try to keep people okay for someone who hates them so much.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I definitely love the character flaws, Sam. That was great. And it really enabled me to get out some toxic feelings and vent them at unnamed, faceless people.
Grand opportunity.
Yes, exactly.
Karen. I mean, I've said things to people who are not masking, but typically most of them, I must be QAnon followers and think it's a conspiracy. I mean, I've even had a healthcare providers tell me that they think this whole thing is overblown. And, you know, it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
And so I just think that until people find they have a family member that's come down with COVID, many of them don't really see it as real.
I don't have any hard data on this, but I feel like the police chief in Middleburg, in Snyder County dying, did a lot to take the wind out of the deniers around here.
Yes.
And of course it was, you know, it was sad to see him go. Yeah.
I'd like to share something personal around that. So I have some close friends, an older couple who live outside of DC, and I've known Barry and Judy, for over 20 years, maybe 25 years. We'd drive together down to Georgia to some early music workshops. And he came down with COVID. He's had some serious health issues. He's on dialysis. He came down with COVID, but so did his partner, Judy. And I heard that she had been in the hospital for over a week with pneumonia. So they're separated. Well, he was getting better with COVID, but unfortunately got an infection from the dialysis.
Oh, no.
And he made the decision to stop that. And so now his greatest hope right now is that he and his partner are not going to be ships in the night, that she eventually can come home and be with him before he leaves, you know? And this is as real as it gets, folks. This is as real as it gets.
He needs to go on hospice right away so that can be arranged.
He is on hospice right
good,
now.
Good.
He's doing it from at home. And in fact, I owe him a call today. I spoke with him yesterday because some other friends of mine were going over to his home to play some early music on some early instruments, recorders, and things like that.
Fabulous.
And he's going to report back to me either how good or how bad they were. So we should have fun doing that, and I'm going to cherish that moment, you know.
I was just going to say, recent research coming out of the Geisinger showed that dialysis is one of the major risk factors for a poor outcome of COVID.
Yeah, so there we go.
Well, Dwayne, you know, you're here with all of these UUs, so there's a whole panoply of pan religious prayers and vibes and thoughts going out to you and to your friends. And in our services, we tend to light a candle for people. It's a thing we do. So I'll be sure to do that.
Thank you.
Verbally.
I have a love of early music, which probably you don't know, Dwayne,
but
living up in Boston for many years.
Exactly. Music. Yeah.
And we had a lutenist at our wedding.
Sweet. And
many of this so long ago. We got a couple of people who have been Bostonians. Like Sam and I didn't only recently realize that.
Well, I just got my viola da gamba repaired. I've been playing it every day, and I have to somehow make a trip down to Philly to get my VL and my tenor viol back, which have been repaired as well. Figured I might as well put the time to good use.
Well, the super old time early music hour is going to be a podcast we can spin off here. I don't have much of a claim to it, although just when you said viola da gamba, I'm sure that it means something in Italian, but I can't get out of the idea that it's
the shrimp. It's the legs.
It also means shrimp in Spanish. I don't know.
Yeah, so gamba is like because you hold the instrument between your legs when you play it.
Yeah.
As opposed to
abraccio. Yeah, as opposed to my daughter was a violist, my son was a violinist.
Like French, jambe, gamba, le jambe.
I'm still trying to figure out how shrimp got the same word as leg.
Is gamberi in Italian?
Benton, Beach Glen, Wilpon, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Max Tony, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punks, Tony, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Apollo, Telenor, Novo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been Stump Creek, Pence Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakeslee, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.